Thank you very much, Quentin, for a great presentation. And now it's the time for questions. We have already a few questions on our chat, so let me start them. I can see Didi, wonderful. Actually, the first question is for Professor Weber. I hope that he's here with us. And one of our speaker is asking, how do the main United Front Link diaspora organizations in Switzerland interact with Swiss society? For example, do they have non-Chinese language website?
Yeah, thank you very much. In my understanding, they're mostly communicating in Chinese. So that first association I was talking about is only in Chinese and it's traditional characters, which is interesting, all of it, right? The second one disappeared, but was also only in Chinese. Their cast is one that has English and Chinese entries mostly. But so to the extent that you find English information or German information, there's always less of it available than the corresponding Chinese versions. So I would think mostly it's in Chinese. And how do they communicate with Swiss society? I find that at this side of the spectrum, these associations mostly communicate in Chinese with Chinese expats. So there's hardly any communication with Swiss civil society. Even this federation that I was talking about, to the extent that it was active in 2016, they offered a statement protesting about the South China Sea arbitration, right? But it was all in Chinese. So that obviously wasn't addressed to the Swiss civil society. At the end, you find this same people sometimes involved as presidents of a local Chinese association. So one, for instance, also a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner who is involved in this Swiss Chinese Chamber of Commerce, she then is also the head of a Schaffhausen China Friendship Association. And there, if you go to these events, or if you look at the pictures posted on these events, there you see an intermingling between Chinese, ethnic Chinese, and let's and many Swiss involved, right? But then this is about Chinese New Year. It's about performances. At that level, you see some communication, but not like messaging within the media, for instance. I find for these activities, it's usually the Swiss loudspeakers that are used and that are worked by other United Front bodies, like what we just heard again in Quentin's talk about the CPAFFC, for instance, right?
Thank you very much for your answer. Actually, I heard that the Chinese ambassador in Switzerland is very active. Yes. Okay, thank you for confirmation. Just heard it from a few of my journalist friends. There's one question for Quentin. Quentin, could you elaborate on the background of entities that engage with the European Parliament? For example, assistance to MEPs, parliament members, etc. Thank you very much.
So what we've noticed with the upper committee is that the assistants of the main MEP Weihe, they all have functions either within the upper committee or somewhere else. I was talking about a cluster of organizations around the committee, the upper committee, and what we've noticed that they usually have they are active in one way or another in this cluster of organizations. So I don't know if it answered the question.
Thank you very much. I think we have one research that was published in Synopsis at the page written by Luigi Chang about the European Parliament assistance and cooperation. So please, if you have a time and if you are interested in this topic, go and find it. Yes, we don't have more questions right now. So maybe if there is something that we missed, maybe Didi, if there's something that we should mention.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's interesting how these German-speaking areas, if you like, pull together. And that's also why I included the head of the Omeitongxuehui, the Western Return Students Association, on my presentation, just the image of the guy in Switzerland, because the German guy, of course, is Pan Tianwei, is Germany and Austria. So there we have the three, as Ralph knows very well, you know, these German-speaking or partly German-speaking areas. And one thing that I have noticed is that the ambassador, the Chinese ambassador in Berlin, tends to be somebody who has served as ambassador in Switzerland, in Austria, and sometimes in the Netherlands as well. And in the Netherlands, he is, it's usually a he, is usually also, well, always has the responsibility for the chemical weapons. What's that organization in the Netherlands that monitors chemical weapons treaties around the world? So then that Chinese ambassador always has that responsibility too. And you really see, like, I mean, whether it's now Wu Kun, who's in Berlin, the ambassador in Berlin, or whether it was Shi Mingde, who was the previous ambassador in Berlin, a long timer, they've all done the rounds. So in a way, it's like, I do feel like as if then Berlin becomes the sort of the place where a lot of this then is perhaps organized out of. And I'm wondering a little bit whether that shows up in the, I think that's an area of exploration in its own right, is how that particular diplomatic foreign affairs system network works for China with United Front in the form of the embassies and the persons of the ambassador in the German-speaking realm, just to say that.
Thank you very much. I can see the Professor Lomová join us, and there is someone, Professor Weber is waving to me. Do you want to react, or that was?
Maybe just one thought, if I may. I think the ambassador question is interesting, and the Swiss ambassador was very active. We just got a new ambassador, so we don't know how things will turn out now, but the last one was very active. There was one case where that was reported in the news about sponsoring news content in a Swiss magazine that was directed through the embassy directly, and he got a platform in one of these journals with a monthly editorial talking about Tibet and Xinjiang and so on. So that one, the previous one, Geng was his name, was very active. But to Didi's point, right, I think that there might also be the language competency thing. Because in Switzerland, of course, you might distinguish whether there's German speaking or French speaking. And since we have both, right, Geneva is to some extent a different story from the rest of Switzerland, from the German speaking realm and the Italian speaking realm. So maybe it has also to do a lot with the language lines. And I have one thing for Quentin, which I was, but I'm sure he's aware of it, but I learned a lot through going through the Voice of Friendship magazine for the CPA FFC, right? And then I just looked it up for the Belgium Friendship Awards that were received. The title actually was Never Forget Old Friends While Making New Ones. And that's how it was reported in the Voice of Friendship. And we know the category of friendship, what it means, right? And I'm saying that because in the Swiss China Association, same thing. So they also all have their friendship award. And I'm just thinking of Anne-Marie Brady's classic book about the category, with a chapter on the category of friendship. And if it's old friend, it has some sort of status, of course. And so just to refer to that resource, because it's, I think, a telling one.
Thank you very much. Now we have a question for all our speakers. There's a question from Julia, I think. How could integration policies involving Chinese communities play a role in weakening the link between Chinese living abroad and United Front organizations? So maybe Professor Weber, if you can start, if you're still online.
Yeah, I can say something very short about it, and then the other two, I think, I'm sure, can say more about it. I think it's an crucial point. And Alex Yoski, who talked about yesterday on the conference, right, in his report on the Party Speaks for You, he has recommendations at the end. And one of the recommendations is exactly that we should try to engage the Chinese community through other fora that are not United Front fora, right, but not to leave the ground of having Chinese expat communities simply being taken over by United Front. And I think that's an excellent recommendation and speaks to the point of the integration that the question just raised. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Didi, may I ask you for your answer, please?
Could you just briefly repeat the question?
Yes. The question was, how could integration policies involving Chinese communities play a role in weakening the link between the Chinese living abroad and United Front organizations?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I guess the issue here is assimilation, and to what extent are people able to fully assimilate into their host societies, countries, or adopted societies, countries. I think, you know, we need to above all make public what it is we know. We need so much more information out there. And for that, we need strategic communications from, for example, researchers and intelligence agencies who might be focusing on this kind of thing, to communicate to the public. The head of your UKIP, General Recker, mentioned this the other day in a different event, the importance of strategic communication with the public at this point. Now, traditionally, that has not really happened because this has been deemed intelligence issues, and intelligence in a democracy, intelligence occupies a different space. Of course, in China, intelligence is embedded into the everyday politics and everyday life. This is the nature of the Communist Party. It's where its strength was always drawn from, was its information and intelligence and military apparatus, etc., political apparatus growing from that. So we're dealing with a really different paradigm of knowledge and information. And so how do we translate that into this sort of Western democratic sphere safely, so that people in Chinese communities who have moved, for example, to Europe, and who do indeed want options, and, you know, who don't want to come under pressure, for example, have, you know, first of all, the information they need. They themselves may not understand what's going on. I've met so many people, Chinese people here in Europe and elsewhere in the world, who, when you use the words United Front, they just sort of look at you, because it's like nobody talks about that at home. Nobody talks about that at home. It's a big dark secret. And that may be changing a little bit now, but it's even specialists, you would think, longtime democracy activists from China living in Europe, they will kind of look at you and say, oh, that's a big secret. So, you know, these are hidden matters, and how to strategically communicate that so that the populations in Europe, Chinese populations in Europe, understand what's going on, are able to deal with it, able to push back about it, able to talk in public about how, or simply able to kind of pursue their own options, because ultimately they are the ones who are going to be really damaged by this, right? By this sort of pressure that comes down. And then if the host society begins to blame them for being Chinese per se, because they are susceptible to this pressure, you know, that's really awful. And we need to indeed have good arguments. Again, I think strategic communication is key. And I think academics speaking out, researchers speaking out, I'm just amazed at how many people in charge of institutions still in Europe, for example, things happen, pressure is, people try to bring pressure on them, money, the wrong kind of money is offered, and they won't talk about it in public. They will not talk about it in public. And I think this is a big problem. We need to communicate more about these risks. And then Chinese people will be able also to share in that discussion and work through it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Didi. Maybe Quentin, if you would like to add something to this question, and then we have another question to all of you. So,
well, it was comprehensive, I think, but I agree with all of what I've been said. It's a mix. It should be addressed as a holistic issue, and we should answer with a mix of targeted communication, maybe creation of dedicated platforms, and involving the diaspora in discussion, in policymaking, and in also raising awareness about the issue, as Didi just said. It's actually a good way for media, attracting media and research attention.
Okay, I think we have a last question here to all of you. How would you assess the level of government awareness of CCP influence in Berlin, Brussels, and Bern? Which areas of government talk about it? So maybe, Quentin, if you are still there, may I ask you to start?
I think at the EU level, there are more and more structures that are put in place so we can address this issue. Since about 2015, 2016, now we have the issue of hybrid threats that has been become the target of a working group at the European Council, for instance. There is also very recently, just a few months ago, I think, a new committee at the European Parliament on foreign interference and hybrid threat that has been created. So, and at the Commission, of course, there is the EAS that opened a new whole department dedicated to information analysis and foreign interference. So there is, although mostly focused on Russia for the moment, but there are structural means that are put in place so we can address this issue. And I think it's important to really take it as a, again, holistic issue, and to talking about it as a hybrid threat is a good way, I guess, for me to approach the problem so far.
Thank you. Didi, may I ask you to add something?
I mean, in Germany, I think it's the kind of the example I showed, just how thoroughly penetrated the economy and society is, including political, you know, elites, business, and how little preparedness there is to discuss this publicly. One example being these recent lists of Europeans that have been published in various newspapers around the world, including in the UK and Australia, other places, there was a German media participant in that project, but they pulled out for reasons that are unclear to me. They didn't want this to get into the German media. So I think Germany, people like to say that things are changing here. I think that there is some growing awareness of the issue, but I still think that, you know, Germany pretty much has its head stuck in the sand on all of this. And the key issue is a lack of political will at the top, or at any level that has any ability to make things happen to move on it. Some of the information services are quite well informed, I think, but due to Germany's historical peculiarities, they have no, there's no tradition of listening to their advice, and their advice is routinely ignored. So they warn about infiltration issues generally, that's, you know, so, but, you know, to remain optimistic, there may be is a slow growing awareness, but again, you know, I don't know, I think economy is king, you know, economy is number one here. I think that until Germany sort of, well, let's see what happens next year after there's a change of government, but again, there are risks.
Thank you very much, Didi. Professor Weber, please.
Yeah, I agree with Quentin and Didi in this. For Switzerland, I would say that there's growing awareness. Of course, I'm not of the government, so I don't know what they know. I'm sure they are aware of it, but those bodies within the government that would be aware of it wouldn't communicate about it, right? But I would assume that there is. I hear from the government, there's interest from the government in learning about this. And also the media in Switzerland is catching up a lot. So within the last year or two, I would think this awareness has been growing quickly in Switzerland. But I agree with Didi. I just want to add one point. It's also in Switzerland, at least, a lack of language. A short historical thing, but after the Cold War, right, who has been teaching Marx? And so the Marxist-Leninist vocabulary itself is a problem, because many people in positions in power positions don't understand when you talk to them about the United Front, right? So there's a lot of conceptual work to be done to explain the United Front to decision makers, and then that's step number one, and then you run into the interests that are strong and powerful that are not ready to problematize China, as Didi has said. So I think there that the focus must be on trying to explain to economic actors how it might not be in their economic interests to be co-opted and possibly in the end being played, right? So if one can make that case, I'm sure economic actors would listen very attentively.
Thank you very much for answering. And there's one more question to you. Yes. From one of our listeners, how influential and active is the Fujian Hometown Association, and why do you think it is important that its members are all restaurant owners?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm not sure how influential it is. It is active. It does these galas and this sort of thing also. I think the fact that it's restaurant owners, for me, rather points to a complex history of how associations have come to be also enlisted by the United Front in the end, right? If you look at the individual members, these are restaurant owners. So many of them have a long history in Switzerland. They've been here for a long time. So I do think that there's different layers. I even found, I think, some associations, although I do not write about it in the report, which have been born as civil society organizations of expat Chinese without any link to the United Front that I could see. But in around the 90s, early 2000s, have been turned into United Front instruments and co-opted completely. Even some that were had a membership coming from Taiwan, for instance, right? So I do think we need to distinguish that receiving end, those who fill the positions in as members, for instance, in United Front positions, and distinguish them from the leaders who, and there's a whole complexity to it, which I think we should try to illuminate in order to understand how that influence works, possibly.
Thank you very much. I think we heard something similar last year about Canada and Canadians groups of Chinese. I don't think that we have more questions, so we can have a short coffee break. And after that, at 4 p.m., we are going to continue with our last panel called Expanding Leninism Control. So please stay tuned, and now let's have a coffee. And again, thank you very much to our great speakers.